Hello and welcome to Multiform, an Xbox podcast. Every week we get together to talk about the Xbox news, rumors, and games we've been playing. New episodes post every Monday at 10 a.m. Eastern. This is episode 134. I'm Tim Shelton, and this week I'm joined by Spencer Rain.
Hello.
And Gus Harden.
Hello.
Hello, gentlemen. So this week we will be discussing Anthem and what's happened there. We'll be discussing the Outriders demo, some changes with Dragon Age 4, Bethesda and what's happening there with Xbox, Destiny 2, some changes there, and much, much more. So without any further ado, we'll start, as we always do, with what we've been playing this week. And I'm going to go first because I want to start with the, well, first, the I only played two things this week. I played Assassin's Creed Odyssey. I'm still working my way through the Fate of Atlantis. This is kind of my like chill game right now. And I'm finally in chapter two, which is the Underworld, which is cool because it's completely different than the rest of the game. But setting that aside, because that's, you know, I'm kind of been playing that off and on for 6 months. Let's talk about the Outriders demo. I played a fair amount of that this week. And I know, Spencer, you did as well. And I want to talk about my thoughts about this game because I've been hot and cold on it since it was announced. You know, we always kind of said it looked like a Destiny-like game. And the pedigree of the studio isn't really in that genre or that level of investment. So we weren't sure what the delivery would be. So I took some notes here. I'll just run through some of my thoughts. First, I think the story is really compelling. I actually was invested in finding out what happened in this world. They do this really cool thing where after the prologue, you jump forward, I think it's 31 years, and you wake up. So you see like the setup of what brought you to this planet. And then you freeze, jump forward 31 years, and you see how that progressed. And now you have all this stuff unwinding that you're now a part of. Spencer, what did you think of the story from your perspective so far?
Yeah, no, I actually, that was probably my favorite thing about this game. I mean, I definitely didn't play as much as you or a lot of people. But yeah, no, I thought it was very interesting. And I thought when it starts out, you like select your character and how you build your character or whatever, and you can name him and, you know, change the appearance and all that. And I was like, all right, whatever. This is like every other kind of Destiny-like game. But I thought once you actually got into the game itself and it went past the cutscenes and your character was actually on the screen and he was talking, or she, if you made a female character, it worked. Like I was really surprised when I played this game. I kind of went into it kind of thinking, this is kind of double A. It's not going to be as good as other, you know, I don't even know what you call them. Not looter shooters, but these kind of multiplayer online shared world type games. It's going to be inferior to those, because it's made by a studio that I've never heard of and doesn't really have much experience. So yeah, I was really surprised with how interesting the story was. And it's so hard to stand out, I think, in this space right now, because everything is sci-fi. Everything is, you know, futuristic in like a mystical way. Everything has kind of like an overarching like mystery. Like, why is this happening? Why did this bad thing happen that we can't explain? I got a lot of Mass Effect Andromeda vibes, actually, from the very, very, very beginning.
Yeah, I did too, especially the environmental design.
Yeah, because it's literally like you're coming from Earth to this strange new planet, and you've been in cryosleep for decades.
You in a giant arc.
Yeah, and you get down to the planet's surface, and there's this huge disaster that ruins everything. Like in Andromeda, it's your dad dying. You know, that's part of the
although
disaster.
That's also the plot of like tons of other stuff like Battlestar Galactica, like
so
humanity leaves Earth to go somewhere,
right? Yeah, or the 100 on the CW, shout out, in later seasons. It kind of was like, dang, I wish this was a single player experience, because you know my natural instinct is going to be towards single player games. It's not going to be towards multiplayer games. So for me, it's like, I'm very interested in the story, but I don't know how it's going to unfold in a multiplayer setting. So yeah, no, I totally agree with you. That was definitely number one for me, was the story was actually very intriguing to me. And I wanted to find out kind of what happened, what has been happening, and how it kind of goes forward.
Yeah. So other things, so gunplay to me felt actually pretty solid. I was impressed with the gunplay. It's third person over the shoulder. You can switch shoulders. To me, it feels a lot like The Division. It's a cover-based shooter. The enemies are kind of spongy. You're putting a lot of bullets in them, especially the bigger ones. You have abilities, which in The Division, they're more tech-based, but in Destiny, they're more powers, which it's closer to Destiny. It controls very similar to The Division. You have LB, RB, and then you have like a super that's both LB and RB. The ability cooldowns are really quick. I was forgetting to use my abilities because they were reloading so quickly that I had, you know, used it, and then 12 to 15 seconds later, it would be up again. But it makes sense because the game relies on a healing mechanic that's tied to killing, doing damage, or combining your abilities with your guns. So I did the Pyromancer class, which when I hit someone with my fire abilities and then do damage to them, it heals me. So there's this, it's kind of like Doom, where there's this risk reward where you have to be doing damage with a combination of abilities, depending on your class, to heal yourself. And it creates like this balance of the gunplay. I'm not sure how it's going to play out, because I was finding that if I get into a tough spot and I've used all my abilities, and this could be just because I'm early in the game and I don't have enough abilities yet to use a bunch of them and charge them up quickly, I wouldn't have any way to heal, right? Like, I'm stuck. The only way I can heal is to do damage. And I think you get a little bit of healing from just shooting guys normally without your abilities, but it wasn't enough to keep me in the fight. So I'm kind of like hiding until my abilities come back. Spencer, did you also play as the Pyromancer? I think they were kind of the more general class. I planned to try all four of them before launch.
No, I was going to play as the Pyromancer before you said you were, but then I was like, maybe I should play something different. And so I actually played as I think it's the Devastator, like the close range.
Is that the one with like the big machine gun, the fourth class on the selection screen, or the first class?
Well, no, it was later. I think it's the fourth one.
Okay.
I didn't play enough to unlock the machine gun, which maybe that betrays how much I really played. But
well, no, I mean, I think the whole like thing and the whole story to the boss is like 2 hours tops, and then you have some side content.
Yeah. But I picked the Devastator class because I kind of like the real quick about that. One of the cool things about the Devastator is you regain your health when you kill enemies at close range. And so it's basically, you're basically incentivized to get in close quarters with enemies and not even use cover, just kind of get right in there. And the first ability you get is like a, where you melee the ground essentially, and it causes like a ripple through the ground, kind of like, it's like a, it reminded me of the Vanguard class actually in Mass Effect. How there was an ability that you had there, but that was the class that I picked, though, the Devastator.
Okay. So I plan on trying them all before launch, but the one that's more stealthy and invisibility based was kind of a sniper, and I didn't really want to do a sniper to start because I wanted to get more into the action. And I can't remember what the other one was. I think it's the other one that relies on close quarters combat. So I picked the more general one. I will say I wasn't wowed by the fire abilities. It could just be, you know, like all you have is three abilities in the demo, or four if you get to the end of it. So you know, the crazy stuff is going to come later when you've unlocked full skill trees. So that's all the stuff that was good. Now I want to talk about some things that were maybe less good. I think the facial animation is a little just mediocre, right? It kind of harkened back to Mass Effect Andromeda for me, where they used, I think, an algorithm to do the syncing of the voice audio with the motion of the lips, and it didn't quite look right in some instances. Also, the character models, and maybe this is just specifically there's like, I don't know, 7 or 8 choices of head for the male and 7 or 8 choices for the female. It's kind of like Destiny. You don't have the customization you have like in a Fallout or a Elder Scrolls. You have just set choices. But the one I picked I did the female. It looked a lot like my character from Saints Row the Third Remastered. And this game has a lot better graphics than a remastered version of Saints Row. Like, the textures are pretty good. The environments look really good. The only thing that just seemed a little off to me was the faces. And it's not just the animation. It just, there was something about it that was a little uncanny valley. it might've been the lighting or the shadow on the face, something about it. No, I don't think that's the case. I think
this happens in every like game preview ever, is that it's like a less polished version of the game.
Oh, I mean, that's true. But also, this is definitely a smaller studio that doesn't have like Destiny or Mass Effect Andromeda level of money. Although Mass Effect,
I bet
Andromeda,
it'll be a little bit better once the full game comes out.
The only other negative I would knock against it is, so load times were fast. Of course, I'm playing on the Series X with the SSD. But they were frequent. Spencer, well, yeah, you're nodding.
That's what I was literally like, but there were a lot of them.
That yes, and it's like every door you go to, it's a loading screen to go into the next room. Also, this could be a beta or a demo thing, but when I would bring up the character inventory menu, not the pause menu, the one that has like inventory and missions and quests and all that stuff, it always took like 3 seconds to load. Like you'd hit the button, delay, and it's there. And that little difference is just becomes a little frustrating over, you know, I'm only 3 hours in, imagine 50 hours in, 100 hours in for this kind of living game. It would be nice to see that come a little faster. And then, yeah, like you said, the loading screens are super fast, but it's an online-based game and they are fairly frequent. Every door you go to, every interaction that puts you into a cutscene, it would stop the gameplay, quick loading, then the cutscene. So that's just like, these are all like little level polished things. And the thing is, all these things could just stay the way they are and it could still be a good game, but it's not, from what I'm seeing, it's not a 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10 game. It's like maybe an 8 out of 10 game tops. But I am invested because I want to see the story. I want to try the rest of the classes. And to be honest, I'm kind of just hungry for this kind of game. It seems like it's less of an investment than a Destiny. And it seems slightly better than an Anthem. It's not as polished as Anthem, but it seems like some of the systems might be just a little more fun if they nail the loot and the crafting in a way that I feel like Anthem didn't. But Anthem was way more polished as far as graphics and controls. Oh, one other thing. Spencer, did you feel weird about the fact that since this is a cover-based shooter like The Division or Gears of War, there's no jump? There's no like, there's no way to get off the ground except for the mantle. And
all right.
So
yeah,
go ahead.
That was my biggest hang up with this game, was there was no jump ability. I don't know why. I can't really explain it, but that was the big, like I couldn't just press B while I'm running across wherever I'm going to jump constantly. Some weird, like, you know, maybe it's a nervous tick that I have in video games, but I have to like constantly be jumping. And it's funny because I'm playing Assassin's Creed and there's no like active jump in that too. It's just mantling and climbing. There's not an actual like jump button. But for a game like this, it felt like it was missing. Like it literally felt like they forgot to add it, and you noticed it when you were just running across the battlefield. I don't know why. Bizarre to me, but that was definitely my biggest complaint by far, was that.
Yeah, and I was on the fence about this because like it feels like it should be there because Destiny has it, but I understand that their gunplay and their movement is more like The Division than it is Destiny or Anthem. So I don't know, it's interesting because they have the abilities, but it's actually more of a gun based ground based game than anything else. So okay, well, I don't want to beat Outriders to death because it's coming out in 4 weeks, so I'm sure we're going to get more time with it, maybe even before launch. Hopefully the final build is out in some people's hands before launch, so we'll get more on that. But this is also a good time for this game to come out. Like we said last week, I think it was perfect for them to put out a demo. I think it's going to change some minds of people that were interested, and I think this is a perfect time of the year because if you look at the next 3 to 4 months, there's like 3 or 4 major games that you can name that are gonna like compete for people's wallets. So it's a good time to be out there with a new IP, I think. So let's go from there to Gus and let's talk about what you've been playing. It says here you've been playing the new Call of Duty Outbreak zombie mode, and I wanted to be able to get to play this week. I just did not get to it, so I'm interested to see what your report is on this.
Yeah, so if you guys will remember, last week I said that I wasn't very sure about how the mode was going to turn out, because I wasn't really sure what to expect based off of what I saw in the trailers. And I was worried that it was going to be kind of like a PvP and PvE at the same time. Like, you were going to be competing against other teams while you worked towards going towards the ultimate goal. It's not like that at all. It's just regular zombies, but you're on a war zone map, essentially. Points are worth less, or sorry, zombies are worth fewer points. Like, they're like 90 normally, or 115 with the critical kill, and now they're 35, and it's like 70 with a critical. So I had a lot of fun with it, actually. I played it with one of my friends starting off. I tried to play it, I want to say, on Thursday, but Xbox Live was not cooperating. And so I wasn't able to update the game and play it. So,
yeah, there was a 5-hour outage on Thursday, which actually prevented you from playing that and prevented me from streaming the Outriders demo, which I had planned on Thursday. So, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm sure a lot of people were aware of that and probably experienced the same thing. But yeah, no, I had a lot of fun with it. It was really cool. It's really big, which actually makes snipers viable now, because before they were just trash, because you're too close to all the zombies and it takes forever to aim down your sight when you have the scope. And it just really was no point to using them. But now you have like longer sight lines, because like I said, it's basically just a war zone map that they have zombies on. And so you'll just be like running around. It is kind of like jarring though, because it's the only time you ever really get screwed is when you're inside of buildings, which you have to go into to get, like, if you want to open loot crates or whatever, you'll have to go in there, open the crate, and then zombies will like basically spawn out of the floor and try to attack you. But when you're out running around there, it's just, there's so much open space, and there'll be like pockets of zombies here or there, but it's just like weird, because it's like you're basically just running around, and there's just, you just can see like a bunch of them in the distance, but you're just like chilling out. It kind of reminds me of DayZ with how you would basically just be like chilling and running around, and then you would just see zombies off in the distance. But yeah, I played a lot of that. I don't really have a whole lot to say about it. I'm enjoying it. The furthest I made it was to round 4, and then I got like bored, or I was doing something else. I think it was my friend left, and so I was like, well, I don't really feel like playing this right now, because there's other things I want to play. So I'll be playing it more as the next week goes on, I'm sure. But I'm enjoying it. I thought it was a lot of fun. And then I also got into Minecraft Dungeons, surprisingly, like last night. So Saturday night, and then today, Sunday, as we're recording this, I installed 2 of the DLCs. I installed the jungle one and the nether one, and I was going to try them out and see if I liked them. And if I was spending more time on the game, I'd buy the other 2, because they're like $5, almost 6 with tax, and you get more than enough game time out of them, I would say, to justify playing it. So I've just been having fun with that more, just because I was looking for something that I could just play and not have to think super hard about it, which is kind of funny, because I was playing like regular, and like my weapons were so good that I was basically God, like, against these people. Like they couldn't hurt me. Like, and if they did hurt me, I would regenerate my health back immediately, and I would murder them in like 2 or 3 hits. And then I was like, you know what? I'm beating this pretty easily. I'm going to do, they have this game mode called Ancient Hunt, and you sacrifice weapons and armor and, I can't remember what they're called. But they're like your little things for your special abilities. You can sacrifice those. And I honestly don't really know what I was doing. They were like, you're like, you have the option to do it. And I was like, well, I'll just throw away these things that I don't really use. I would presume it spawns more ancients. I don't know. I'd have to look more into it. But I was like, you know what? I'm doing well enough. I'll bump this up like 1 difficulty level. And because it was like my ability level was like 108, and the next level up was like 109, and so I was like, you know what, this shouldn't be too hard. So I got in there, and I was doing fine. I was just killing mobs, doing my thing, and then I got to the first ancient, and that thing kicked my butt. I was like, holy crap, because it had a bunch of like minions that spawn with it that were the actual problem. Because they would spawn their own little enemies, and so I was just getting like massacred. Like I died 3 times killing one. I used up all of my my respawns, and I was like, you know what, not really worth it. So I finally beat that one, and then I was like, I kept going through it, and I was like, you know what, I think I've cracked the code on how to beat these things. And so I tried to fight another one, and I died immediately, and it was like game over, and it sent me back to camp. So I was like, dang it. But no, I was having fun with it. I just kind of like it's just mindless fun, which I always enjoy. If me liking Marvel Ultimate Alliance, because it's a very similar game to that, has anything to do with that. But it's just fun to just be able to just go through it, be mindless, and waste a couple hours. And then I did get into Valhalla, and I played the River Raids, or I played one of them, and man, that game just annoys me now. Spencer can attest to this as well. My biggest thing is just barred doors. Like, what's the point? What is the point of barred doors? Like, it's so easy to get into the buildings anyway that there's really no reason for the door to be barred. It just makes me waste 30 seconds to a minute of my day trying to get into a building that I could have just walked in the door. But nope, I had to climb up to the top of the building and jump in. Or there was a window on the other side, and I can just jump through the window. Or I'll try to jump into the wall, because the climbing system is so bad that first I'll try to jump into the wall and won't get in the building, and then I'll finally go and go through the window, and then I'll just beat the crap out of the door. It opens up, and I'm in. Like, it just annoys me. Oh, it also took away Noden's Ark, which, if you'll remember, I think it was either last week or 2 weeks ago, I got it while we were recording. While you guys were talking about something else that I didn't have a lot of experience with, I went into the game, I waited, I got it, and then I played again today, and it just wasn't there. I just didn't have it anymore, which is kind of annoying. So I had to go back and wait again, wait by the rock for like 10 minutes, and then I finally got it again. And then they introduced skills, which were already in the game that they took out, that I had spent points on, and now I'm having to re-spend my points on them. And I didn't get those points back originally, so it set my progress back. I was just, I'm like, come on, man. This is like Cyberpunk. It's like my Cyberpunk, because I didn't play it. But it was just frustrating.
Yeah, and your frustration is nothing compared to what Spencer went through. Spencer?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so like, before today happened, like before we were recording, I beat the main story of Valhalla this week. Several days ago, like on like Wednesday or something, like the England and Norway stuff. All I had left was Asgard and Jotunheim and all that good stuff. And I was planning on actually, because I don't often, when I beat a game, I don't often like take notes down. Like I did it with SnowRunner and a couple other games that I really, really had a good time with, and I really wanted to give it their due. And so I was like, I should do this with Valhalla, because this is the last time I'm going to talk about it, you know, until DLC comes out. But then, as was hinted at, today I actually finished Jotunheim and Asgard, and I went and got Gungnir, which Gus has talked about, which is Odin's spear. It's one of the four Isu weapons in the game. Went and got that, and then, what is it? Is it Noden's Ark? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, like Noden's Odin. Ark bow or whatever.
Sounds like Noah's Ark. Yeah. Anyways, it's the bow that Gus has been talking about for a few episodes. I went and got that, but in order to get that, you have to wait until the sun is going down. And so I kept trying to game the meditation cycle, but I couldn't. So I was like, all right, whatever, I'll just watch YouTube. And so I have my character sitting there, and it probably took 25 minutes for it to go from, you know, morning to dusk or whatever. So I got Noden's Ark, and then I saved my game because I was done, basically. I had actually finished the Ragnar Lodbrok Drenger missions, and I'd gotten his special dagger, and I was literally done. I have nothing left in the game to do other than if I wanted to get 100% in each of the provinces, which I'm never going to do, by the way. Quick aside, if that includes Asgard and Jotunheim, because there are these treasures on both of those maps called Ymir's Tears, or Ymir's like Blood Tears, I think, in Jotunheim, and there's like 50 on each of them. So like it's a ridiculous amount of stuff you'd have to do.
You get 5 skill points if you collect them all.
Well, I'm already maxed out. Like, I'm just getting mastery points at this point. So it's like, who cares? But anyway, so I saved my game. And also, I should, another quick aside, I hadn't gotten the achievement yet. There's a secret achievement for beating Asgard and Jotunheim. I hadn't gotten that yet. And I was like, according to true achievements, I should have gotten this, you know, a while ago. And I was like, well, whatever. You know, they had some issues. I had issues on Thursday during that blackout, the Xbox Live blackout. I had another Assassin's Creed Valhalla achievement that wasn't popping. And I was like, oh, well, you know, maybe if I just save, quit out, restart the game, we'll be good to go, and I'll get the achievement. So I save. I actually saved twice because I saved right before I got the bow, and then I saved after I got the bow just in case I messed something up. Anyway, saved, quit out of the game, load the game back up, and, you know, it defaults to continue right there, and I see the save that pops up when it asks if I want to continue. It says February 25th, and I was like, it's February 28th. I saved on February 20th. That's weird. Okay, whatever. So then I go to the load category of the main menu, and I have all these auto saves and a couple manual saves, and then they're all like February 25th and before. I'm like, that's strange. Did it not render my save? Were there no auto saves that accrued between February 25th and today? Because I beat several missions. Like, I had beat most of Jotunheim. I hadn't even really started Jotunheim the last time I saved on the 25th. So that's strange. Turns out all my saves just randomly disappeared from the last 3 days. It's not that much progress in the grand scheme of Valhalla. It's like maybe 6 hours, which is a lot of time. Don't get me wrong, that's a lot of time. But when this game is probably about 110 hours, I think I was at for getting not 100%, because like I said, I didn't complete all the provinces, but 100% of the missions and all the treasures and all the important mysteries, like say the mysteries of Britain and the all the Roman artifacts, like those things, the things that are tied to achievements. I've gotten all that stuff, but I didn't complete all the world events. And I don't have all the treasures. Like, I don't have all the ingots. My saves just disappeared. About six hours, just poof. Definitely was not shocking based off of my experience with this game. And I think Gus, his experience with this game as well. It's definitely not as dramatically bad as Cyberpunk or like PlayStation 3 Skyrim was. It's not like that, but I think for Assassin's Creed, this is as bad as it's ever been as far as just
worse than Unity.
Unity's fine, weird, honestly. Because well, first of all, I have to be honest, it's been what, 8 years or 6 years? It's been a long time, so I don't remember exactly how bad Unity was. Dude, but
the movement like update from Black Flag to Unity was so good.
Yeah, and honestly, like I was texting Gus about this regarding movement. Like I literally recorded a game clip of this section, which I will not do this again. I did it today, but I lost my progress. I'm not going to do it. There's a viewpoint in Jotunheim. It's like this super tall tower that is interspersed with ice, so you can't just climb straight up it like you could, say, a normal watchtower. You have to figure out the secret paths through it, and it's Jotunheim, so there's magic. So you have to kind of navigate the magic and figure out what's going on there. It probably took me 20 minutes to do this a viewpoint, which viewpoints take 60 seconds to do, 2 minutes to do. But I recorded a game clip that's me just at this ledge, and like there was another like miniature ledge above it, maybe like a foot above it, and my character just wouldn't climb up. I had to like climb all the way around to the other side, and then it would climb up. It's just weird stuff like that. That maybe it was an Odyssey, but I'm thinking more of Origins. Maybe it was in Origins, when this whole new engine started, but it's like the game's gotten too big or too complicated that it can't keep up with itself. And so little stuff like that kind of breaks the climbing mechanics. I don't know. But I'm glad to be done with this game. If DLC was coming out Tuesday, the Ireland DLC, I wouldn't get it. I would just say right now, I would not get it. I wouldn't spend the money on it. Even if I could buy it piecemeal and not spend $30 or $40 on the season pass, even if it was $15, I just wouldn't. And I don't have 270 like Tim does, but I have money in my Xbox Live account to where I wouldn't actually be paying for it. With my credit card, I'd be paying with gift card money, but I just wouldn't. There's just, I'm so like, this game is like, I don't want to say it broke me of Assassin's Creed, but it's just like, man, they
just a little burnout.
Yeah, a little burnout, but they just,
you're a huge fan. You know, you'll be back. Yeah. It'll be fine.
No, I'll be back, you know, for mainline games, but I don't know if I'm going to come back to Valhalla. Gus said this weeks, probably months ago when he had beaten the game, he said, there's all these little things about the game that just add up over 100 hours that when you get to the end, you're just like, I'm done. I can't keep putting myself through this. And it's too bad because there's a lot of cool stuff there. Like I'm fully kitted out in Thor's armor. I have Mjolnir, Excalibur. Like I'm dual wielding Mjolnir and Excalibur.
Hey.
Like what?
Now dual wield Excalibur and Gungnir.
Well, I did for, you know, 20 minutes until I lost my progress. So like that's really sweet. Like that stuff about the game is really cool and that's what makes me like it. But it's just like, I think the biggest thing too is just, you know, it makes me really respect what Rockstar did with Red Dead. I think that's the best comparison because it's new enough and it's big enough, but it's like everything in Red Dead was purposely made the way that it was made, and it added something to the story and it added something to the game, and it was all done nearly perfectly. Whereas like with Valhalla, it's like, yeah, they apparently made the map smaller than Odyssey, but the map is still gigantic and everything you're doing, it's like, there's no point. Like it's like a self-perpetuating map. Like you're only going to these places in the map to find random treasures or, you know, Roman artifacts or whatever. And there's really no, it's just mindless. You're just mindlessly wandering around, spending 100 hours on this map, finding things, completing missions that may or may not matter. And you know, even at the end of the day, it's, you know, it, people complain that the more recent games aren't Assassin's Creed, and I brush them off for the longest time, but now I'm kind of agreeing with him because literally at the end of this game, Eivor is like, I'm not an assassin. I'm a Viking. My people relish like attention and relish, you know, allies being on them. It's the exact opposite of the Assassin's Creed. And I was like, you know, that's kind of been my experience with this game. Like it's not an Assassin's Creed game anymore. Like it's totally moved beyond that. It's fine. It's a great game for what it is, but they'll never change the game because, or the name of the game, because then you lose the clout of that and you're not going to make as much money probably, whatever. But yeah, it's its own, you know, whatever you want to call it, historical RPG. I don't know what you call it. Cause it's a little bit of fantasy obviously with the Isu and all that, but yeah, it's just, talk about one of the most frustrating games I've ever played. That was still a lot of good there, but still so frustrating.
Yeah. It just tries too hard. I told this to Spencer earlier. Like the game tries too hard to be like immersive, or that was like my simplified version of what I could say is the base problem. Because like I said, like for me, like the barred doors, like it's like I understand the gameplay, like, prerogative of that, but like it's just frustrating at that point. Like there's too many things that are too hard to get to for no apparent reason. Like it's almost as if it's there specifically for you to like to explore, I guess, which that is like part of the gameplay, because they ask like what difficulty is, like if you want to play on exploration, which I talked about that with Spencer, about how much will that really affect the game, because I never really have a hard time finding things. But
are you playing on the guided or the
explorer? No, I'm playing on exploration, which I've been playing on since Origins.
So I think the only difference is you have to talk to people to have the icons appear.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't just put a marker everywhere,
but it gives
right
you like
you talk to somebody.
It gives you like a good description of where the place is at. So that's usually easy enough to find. So
it works better in Assassin's Creed than it does in Ghost Recon Breakpoint.
Oh, yeah.
Breakpoint.
Oh,
it's,
for sure.
It's terrible in Breakpoint because the map sucks. But
yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
No,
cut you
you're
off.
Good.
Keep going.
And so I agree with Spencer. There's a lot of good stuff to say about the game, but for like just all the little things, like all the gameplay mechanics are just kind of wonky. And they'll probably get patched and fixed up as people express more frustration with the game and during its lifespan. But like, they're just like, to me, the like end point of Odyssey is like the pinnacle of gameplay mechanics for like the current generation. Like area looting, stuff like that, stuff that's just not in Valhalla for no apparent reason anymore, but will probably get implemented. And yeah, just to kind of piggyback off of Spencer's, it's like Assassin's Creed isn't really Assassin's Creed anymore. It's almost like it's kind of grown up. It's graduated from being just you're an assassin. Like that trope is kind of played out. And I mean, it honestly hasn't been like that since Black Flag anyway. So it's been 7 years, honestly, since that's even been true.
Well, see, I would push back on that because like Syndicate and Unity.
Well, Syndicate and Unity kind of like went back. I'll give you that much.
But I know what you're saying. Yeah, like the more recent games, for sure.
It's just like open combat is easier, and like it's easier than doing the stealth, which obviously makes sense. But it needs to be harder, in my opinion. Which I think they tried to make it harder because combat has been kind of weird for the last couple games, in my opinion. But
I think the way they describe it is the reason it's still Assassin's Creed is it exists in the Assassin's Creed world. It's just like you're no longer playing primarily an assassin.
It's like, I wish they would go back.
Yeah, I was going to say, I have two last thoughts and then I'll be done. One is, I think it would do them well to either split the series and go back, you know, to making games that where the missions are centered around assassinations, like Syndicate, I think was the last game that did this. And it's not surprising that it's probably my third favorite Assassin's Creed game, but it was the last one where the missions you were doing. Yeah. There was a ton of open world exploration stuff in London because it was a huge map, but still a lot of the missions you were assassinating people and it was sneaking around and getting to the objective. It wasn't just traveling across this province and on my way to this mission where I'm doing nothing related to the assassins. I'm like helping out some Danes fight the English or the Anglo-Saxons. All the way there, though, I'm going to loot some Roman artifacts. I'm going to go into a couple bandit hideouts and, you know, open some chests and get some ingots or whatever. It was, you just went from point A to point B. You did your assassination and there was a cool little narrative wrapped up in that, and then you made it into a 20-hour game. They've gotten away from that, and I think that was when they were at their strongest. And it's funny I say that because Origins is probably my second favorite game. So, you know, clearly they hit something with Origins and Odyssey to a lesser extent that they've gotten away from in Valhalla. And I don't know, it's just, that's my other point, was just that there's, like Gus said, I mean, there's so many things that Odyssey did well, even though it was a bigger map and it was a huger, a larger experience that...
Huger,
yeah. I just made that word up. But even though it was a longer game and a bigger map, they somehow were able to not make the game drag. I mean, it maybe for some people it did. I'm sure it did, but I don't know. It's just, it seemed like there was a lot less interesting things going on in Valhalla. It's a lot more kind of just meh about Valhalla and whatever, you know, that's just how it goes. And, you know, maybe I'm playing the game wrong. Maybe I wasn't supposed to beat it, you know, within the first 3 months that it came out. I don't know, but 4 months really.
Well,
it's about 4 months next week.
Play it anyway you want to play it, but
I know we got to move on. We got to move on. I know.
To close out this Valhalla door, I was going to say there is one benefit to being like me where you're really bad about jumping around between games and having a backlog is by the time I get around to finishing this game, they'll have patched it so many times that 90% of the bugs will be gone from it and all the DLC will be out. So, I mean, I'm playing Valhalla, but I'm actually spending more time with Odyssey right now than Valhalla. So,
yeah, no, okay. I know.
Yeah, it's funny. Valhalla has been out for 4 months, yet we were 40 minutes into the show and we're just rolling into the news.
That's it. We're done talking about it until DLC comes out, which we have no idea when that's going to happen. So
I think because of the pandemic, it's probably going to be like end of March, early April. If I
all the haters yep. out there can be satisfied, we're done talking about Assassin's Creed.
Well, just this is a quick comment. We talked about this off the air. We do talk about Assassin's Creed a lot on this show because we're a big fan of the franchise.
We're an Assassin's Creed fair, podcast.
To be fair, it's like a top 10 seller every year that it comes out. So it's not like it's not a relevant game to the majority of people yeah. that are interested in Xbox. So
no, I made the observation this week that I was like, you know, other than sports games and Call of Duty and, you know, Nintendo's big franchises like Mario spinoffs or whatever, it's always the big game. Other than those games that are big every single year, when there's an Assassin's Creed game, it's always a huge deal. And I think since the first game came out, you know, the last 13 years or so, like it's right up there with any other franchise as far as being kind of a pillar of video games. And, you know, not everybody plays it clearly like Call of Duty, but still, I would argue that it's one of the most important franchises in the running right now. Anyways, I digress.
Okay, well, let's hit the news. Number one this week, we talked about this a couple weeks ago. Anthem Next was going to have its fate decided by a internal review about a week and a half ago. Well, the outlook is not good. So Anthem Next has been officially canceled. They posted this on the BioWare blog and their social media. Basically, because of the pandemic and the other projects they have in queue that to focus on Dragon Age and then the next Mass Effect, they really need to put all their efforts into those. And if they keep trying to stretch themselves thin by having Anthem, Dragon Age, Mass Effect, and Mass Effect Remaster all going at the same time, they're going to risk, you know, having to push into crunch and things like that. I don't think anybody, I know there's a pretty... there is a tight Anthem community of people still playing the game that were really hopeful for the relaunch, and they're bummed. But I think the major community at large is more kind of the writing was on the door and the fact that it's been 2 years good. And about we hadn't time. Heard. Now, that's not fair because neither of you guys played it. At least I played and beat the game.
No, it was been past due. I was about to say the king is dead, but the peasant is dead. It's just another dead game. No one cares about it anymore.
Yeah, it's sad. This game, of all the games that died really quickly, like Bleeding Edge and what was the one from Gearbox that they did before Borderlands 3?
Battleborn.
Oh, yeah.
Of all the games that like failed to launch that haven't had a resurrection arc like Star Wars Battlefront 2 had, this is the one that had the most opportunity. Anthem, so just to do a quick moratorium on it, Anthem had great like movement, it had solid gunplay, and it had semi-interesting abilities tied to your guns and stuff. Really, if they had shored up the story and the world building and some of the loot-based mechanics and the things they set out to do in Next, if they had executed that at a high level, it could have turned around. Like, I have no doubt that they could have turned this around. And I was interested in seeing it. For a long time, I kept Anthem installed on my Xbox just because I wanted to get the update when it came out. You know, that way it would just push to my Xbox because I was interested to see what they would do with it. So even though it had been 2 years, even though the writing was on the wall a little bit, even though there were a lot of people rooting for this to fail, and even though, you know, even we weren't the kindest to this game, there was opportunity there, and it is sad that 2 years was wasted trying to save this. That we're just never going to see the fruits of that labor. That's the part that is the saddest to me, is that we're just never going to see.
Yeah, no. And to echo off that, I mean, it's not just that. I mean, it's the development before the game came out. It's the hundreds of millions of dollars that EA and BioWare spent for nothing. And I think you can say nothing, because if you invest 200 million or 300 million, however much money between now and or between when development started and today, I mean, it's got to be close to that. And there's nothing to show for it because the game is officially going to be dead now. And I don't know. It's just, you think about them, what they could have used that money on: making Andromeda a good game, making Dragon Age 4 come out, you know, in our lifetimes. something like that. I don't know. So, I mean,
that's still the most shocking thing to me. I think I said this on another episode, is that they were willing to put 2 years of work into relaunching this, but they weren't willing to like try and invest in Andromeda to save it, or to like enhance it beyond the patches they gave it right after launch.
Yeah. And I honestly feel like that was, those things are one and the same, as far as they weren't willing to put the money into Andromeda because they thought that by chasing the hypothetical potential Anthem money, like that they thought maybe they could get Destiny money at the end of the day or something like that. I think they kind of screwed themselves in that respect, because yeah, you're right. I mean, it's shocking that they didn't even try when the Mass Effect trilogy is so beloved as it is and is so well regarded as it is, that they just were like, we're not even going to try with Andromeda. But Anthem, this game that has no basis for success, no basis for popular interest like Mass Effect Andromeda, we're going to keep dumping money, resources, time, people, everything into this. And then, you know, here we are at the end of the day, they're just pulling out of that too. It is surprising.
So this segues perfectly into our second story this week, which is Dragon Age 4 is reverting to a single player only RPG based on Anthem's failure and Jedi Fallen Order's success. Now, this report comes from Jason Schreier, who's now at Bloomberg. And so, Spencer, I know you dropped some notes in here from a couple different sources about what's going on here, but why don't you give us the lowdown on what is being reported about Dragon Age 4?
Yeah, so fresh off the downfall of Anthem, news came out that either EA or BioWare, I'm sure it was EA, is allowing BioWare to revert Dragon Age 4 to solely a single-player experience. Based off of Anthem's failures, like I said, but also they made note that they were surprised. Apparently EA was surprised with Jedi Fallen Order's success. I think they sold 10 million copies as of when this report came out. I think between those two factors, Jedi Fallen Order's success and Anthem's failure, they decided to nix the multiplayer aspect of Dragon Age 4. And depending on who you read that from, it was a little bit more complicated than that. Like Game Informer was saying that the whole game is being reworked. But then VGC and some others were just saying that multiplayer was simply being dropped. So it's probably somewhere in the middle, as these things usually go. But this is a good sign, or a good update, I think. I mean, multiplayer doesn't make sense for a Dragon Age game. I always think multiplayer in medieval or fantasy type games doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, if you ask me.
And it wasn't competitive multiplayer, right? It was co-op and more, I think the term I saw was shared world, like live service game type mechanics.
Well,
right?
I mean, yeah, exactly. And that is even more of a cause to have it dropped, because if you couldn't make it work with Anthem, which is lends itself much more to that gameplay style, then I don't know how you would make it work with Dragon Age. Dragon Age is such an interesting franchise to me, because I think the games have gotten worse as they've gone on. I mean, there's only been 3. But whatever they can do, I think, to make Dragon Age 4 a success and come out of the gate strong, I think the better. Because not only, you know, is BioWare in a rough spot, it's been a long time since we had a good BioWare game, but I think just in general, between the Dragon Age franchise and I think EA, they both, all three of the players here need to have a success story. I know EA with Jedi Fallen Order, I mean, they've had some recent good news in that respect, but I just think Dragon Age 4 means so much more to EA than Jedi Fallen Order did. Probably not as much as Mass Effect 4 or even, you know, the Legendary Edition doing well, but I still think Dragon Age 4 is very important to them. I'd argue that it's more important than whatever the next Battlefield game is, because I think Battlefield has done fine. Obviously not as good as Call of Duty, but I think Dragon Age is their most important single player franchise, and it didn't make sense for them to include multiplayer with it. And so it's good to see them realize that, okay, we don't need to have a shared world experience with Dragon Age. We can have it be single player only. And it's, there's so many, there are so many different, I think, I don't know if you want to call them gameplay elements or what, that you can incorporate into a single player game that connects that player to the outside world. I'm trying to remember with Inquisition, there was like a, not a leaderboard system, but there was like a way, I don't remember exactly what it was. It's been, again, so long. It's been 7 years since we had that game. There was like a gameplay element, I can't remember exactly what it was, that connected you to your friends list and connected you to your friends that you could kind of compare things, but I don't remember exactly what it was. But I think you can have some connective tissue to Xbox Live without having it be a shared world shooter or shared world experience or a multiplayer PvE or anything like that. So no, this is good news, I would say, in every way that one can have good news.
Yeah, not everything needs to be an online experience. Like, give us a break, please. That's why Fallen Order was so popular, is because people were just like, it's just a linear, straightforward, almost cinematic experience that like looks good, it's fun to play. Like, you can sit back and like relax and play it and like be engrossed in the world. Like, you don't, not everything needs to be multiplayer or have like loot and other crap shoved into your face 24/7 from developers. Like, you don't need that. Like, sometimes,
yeah, it feels like every game has seasons, right? Now, and it's like every game can't be a job,
right?
Like, you can't,
yeah,
be required to keep up, like, not required, but like, if you want to be invested in that franchise, you can't,
yeah,
have to play a season every 6 weeks.
100% agree with that. So I think,
unless that's the only
great
game you play,
yeah,
and if you're a gamer that likes to play diverse experiences, you don't have time for that many live experience games. And also, we have more failures now than we have successes. Like, Destiny is a success. Fallout 76, I feel like, has actually turned the boat around. But how many do we have that have fallen by the wayside? I mean, Division was fairly successful, but they're not doing a Division 3. Anthem fell away. I can't even think of others. Borderlands 3 kind of toes the edge of the line between, it's a single player game, but it definitely has like a live service element where they have like events at holidays and they do DLC now in his second year. And it's not exactly live service. Anyway, not, you hit it on the head, Gus.
Yeah.
Not every game needs to be live service. Single player. And I think we're actually in a resurgence of single player games.
Good.
And I hope it continues.
Me too.
Moving on, number three. This one's a straightforward rumor. And I actually, in my notes from the different places I picked this one up, actually, I think the original source is Thoreau or Thorat. I always call it Thoreau. It's not French. Thorat. They are saying that there is going to be a March Xbox event. They're saying the name of it is What's New in Gaming. And they're the only place that I saw a date cited, as supposedly this is happening on March 23rd, which, picking up the calendar real quick just to see what day of the week that is, that would be a Tuesday. So the question is, if Xbox is having a big event in late March, we know in early March they're supposed to find out from the UK, or not UK, the EU, what the status of the Bethesda acquisition is. What do we think we're going to hear about in a late March event?
Wasn't the rumor originally that it was just going to be an Xbox Bethesda event? And then it,
yeah,
kind of got
so
flushed
early
out
in the week, there was a couple of whispers. And then I saw the late week confirmation from Thrott that it would be March 23rd. Mm-hmm. And it would be What's New in Gaming. So those could be separate events, but I think they're probably the same.
Yeah. Yeah, I would think so too.
I honestly don't expect bombs, because I think you save Starfield or anything else that you're going to drop that's big, or like the news, any news announcement like games, I think you save that for whatever your E3 replacement is this year. And all you do in this event is talk about what it means for Bethesda to be part of Xbox.
Yeah.
And games that are already announced, give updates on those. Like, tell,
yeah,
us what's going on with Hellblade, blah, blah, blah.
I was
going
to say, there was some stuff this week with Halo, some new screenshots and things like that. So maybe there's a little bit more Halo Infinite talk as we moved, you know, into the bug smashing stage out of purely development stage. But yeah, no, I think initially I was like, oh, this is when they announced that Starfield's coming out in 2021. But I think you're probably right. It probably makes more sense to talk about that in the summertime, rather than, you know, in the middle of March. I mean, granted, I would love that if they're like, oh yeah, Starfield's coming out in November of 2021, right alongside Halo Infinite and Forza Motorsport. But
yeah, I think I don't even think this will be announced, but I think it's more likely that we get a Wolfenstein 3 this fall and we don't see Starfield until at least next year.
Really? Yeah.
That's my prediction.
I don't think that's a terrible prediction. It's just we haven't heard anything about Wolfenstein 3. Whereas Starfield, there's been actual rumors saying this game might or was supposed to come out in 2021. So,
yeah. Oh, you know, I did forget about that. There was also a rumor this week that was a credible unnamed insider that said they heard that as of like last month, Starfield was still planned for this fall. But that could change with the pandemic and all the stuff that's going on. The acquisition obviously is another huge wrench.
And I was going to say, it's just the EU that's ruling. I don't think US regulators have signed off on this thing yet. So I don't think they could announce anything in this month or in March rather that says, you know, anything more affirmatively as far as a connection between Xbox and or Microsoft and Bethesda. I mean, I guess they could say, you know, we have a partnership agreement with Bethesda to release Starfield exclusively on the Xbox in the place or in the PC, but they couldn't say, you know, due to our recent acquisition, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I think you're probably right. I don't think we hear anything major like that. I think if anything, it's maybe just some generalized kind of, this is what our relationship with Bethesda means to us, that type of talk. And then maybe some Halo talk, since everybody wants Halo talk.
Well, and it could even be that this is way played up by like podcasts and news sites. And what it actually is just literally what's new in gaming at Microsoft. And they talk about the software updates for the Series X and they talk about the X Cloud and Game Pass and just and like all the stuff that we already really know about.
And they give us a console release date for Flight Sim, something else they could announce.
Yeah, like that would be a lot more like smaller stuff that would make sense. And then maybe this event is like aimed more at a casual Microsoft audience and less at a hardcore audience that you're going to hit with like an E3 or something like
that. Well, and also it's in the shadow of a Nintendo Direct and a State of Play, which didn't really have too much ground shattering news there. So it probably will just follow that trend.
So I'm not real tuned in with the Nintendo community, but it does seem like sentiment online was that Nintendo really crapped the bed with the Direct because everyone wanted the new Zelda 2 to be dated or announced or get something besides, it was already announced, but get some details. And instead they announced, what was it, a Skyward Sword HD remaster as their like big one more thing, and everybody was super let down. And then the State of Play, I watched like, I don't know, 5 or 10 minutes of, and I was bored to tears. Like, it was just like stuff either you don't care about or you already knew was coming and it just was giving you a trailer for it. I can't think of one thing that was exciting about that, except for they announced the PS5 version of Final Fantasy VII, which obviously that's a huge game people are excited about. But it does seem like this time of year, I mean, to be honest, like, why would you drop a big event this time of year? Because if you put anything out for anything that's coming out in the back half of the year, you have to sustain your marketing for like 7 months. It's really hard to keep up the emphasis and like the momentum of a marketing campaign for that long. That's why the famous Fallout 4 marketing campaign was so genius. They bombed the game and then it was coming out in like 6 months. So pre-orders were going to start. And then like you had just enough time to like tell a really tight marketing message about why this game is good and why it's better than Fallout 3 or and all that. So the years, I'm hoping the days of 2 year marketing campaigns are over. And you know, they made the early mistake of announcing Elder Scrolls 6 and Starfield before they probably should have, but those games were already assumed in production, so they were kind of in a rock and a hard place. But okay, well, let's move on. Number four, and this one's probably going to be mostly me since I'm the only Destiny fan on the show. Destiny 2 made some big announcements. They put out a huge blog that was like the state of the game from the new. So we talked a couple weeks ago about all the changes over at Bungie, how they restructured the studio, promoted some people, hired some new people. They're expanding to a new IP. They're still going to keep expanding Destiny 2, and then they're also going into other media. So they have a new, I think he was like co-game director, is now leading Destiny. And he put out this huge blog and it laid out basically the next 3 years, but more the next three seasons, seasons back half of 13, 14, 15, through the rest of this year, all the changes that they're working on. And I don't want to go through it all. You can go check out that blog. If you're a huge Destiny fan, you probably already know what I'm talking about. But the big things were they announced that the expansion that was supposed to come this fall, the Witch Queen, is being delayed to spring 2022, which this will be the first year, I believe, without a major fall Destiny release since the original Destiny in 2014. 2014? Is that right? Yeah, I think that's right. But they also said that the reason they're doing this is, one, they don't want to crunch the team, and two, they've kind of always wanted to move to a Q1, like beginning of the year timeframe for their big yearly expansions, and they just couldn't do it until they were independent and, you know, had a bunch of other pressures off of them. And if you think about it, how genius would that be if from now on the big Destiny expansion comes out in Q1 or the beginning of Q2 every year, where they have like no major shooter competition? Everybody's already gone through their blast of Call of Duty for the year and all these other shooters that are always coming out in Q4. So I think that could be really exciting. And then Lightfall is the other DLC they announced long ago. That'll be out the next year, assumedly spring 2023. And then the surprise was they announced that they're actually adding another large expansion that'll come out the year after that. And they didn't name it, but that would be spring 2024. So they basically have a story through three more expansions of Destiny 2 that is going to complete the Light and Darkness saga. And then beyond that, Destiny will enter some new saga where the challenge of what they're trying to overcome is completely different than the power of the light and the darkness that were these like omnipotent forces in Destiny up until now. The other two big changes are they're rolling back gun sunsetting. So this is where they were capping how high you can level up guns each season. So if you got a gun in season 12, you couldn't level it up to the max once of season 13. And people hated this because you grind in Destiny for the loot. And if you get good guns and then suddenly they're obsolete the next season, you can't use them in the raid, or you can, but only if you want to be underpowered, because they're going to be 50 light levels or power levels below what the cap is in the new season. And after a few seasons, those guns become completely useless in pinnacle tier and really in-game level activities. And it was very unpopular with the community. They felt like it put a expiration date, is the way Bungie described it, on loot, because now it was no longer good after a certain date in like high tier activities. So they're doing away with that. The only crappy part about this is they're not fixing it for the seasons that they had it in place. So seasons 11 and 12, I don't know how many seasons back, I didn't keep track, but the guns that were capped in those seasons are still going to be capped. It's just going to be fixed going forward. So I guess a little bit of good, a little bit of bad. And then finally, they confirmed that crossplay is coming this fall, which is huge, because when I was a Destiny addict in Destiny 1 days, I used to play. I had three fully leveled characters on Xbox, and I had one fully leveled character on PS4 so that I could play with my PlayStation friends. And I always back then wished that I could just play my Xbox character on PlayStation without having to rebuy all the DLC and level the character and invest all that time when the character I wanted to play as was on Xbox. Well, now they're going to have crossplay finally after, what, 7 or 8 years. And of course, it's now when I don't have enough time to stick with Destiny like I used to anyway. So, but it's great for the community, so I'm really excited about it. I know you guys aren't Destiny guys, but do you have any thoughts on anything that I just kind of ran through? I think it's all good stuff, except
crossplay is always good, and everything being added.
It's crazy to me that Bungie is able to figure this out to such a degree and such a success rate and such a complexity that EA wasn't able to with Anthem. Because EA has more money they can throw at the problem, but, you know, it's a perfect example of that money doesn't solve everything. Because I think, you know, Bungie was as controlling Anthem, they probably would make it into a success. But it's just remarkable to me that a game like Destiny 2 is consistently year after year getting content that people for the most part seem to enjoy and seem to react well to, but Anthem was the way that it was. I don't know.
Well, and I guess the thing is there's been times in Destiny where things were not good. Like they made changes that were unpopular and people didn't like.
Sure,
like this one with the loot sunsetting. But the difference is they listen to the community and they double down and they fix it. I think you see the same thing in other games that are hugely popular live service games like Fortnite and Apex Legends. They try new stuff, and if people don't like it or it was a mistake, they're not unwilling to, or that's a double negative. They're willing to admit their mistake and fix it or improve on it. And like this gun sunsetting thing, undoing it creates a new problem. And so they said, you know what? We still need to figure out a way to deal with this problem of people, the meta not changing in our game correctly. But because we screwed it up this first time, we're going to fix that. And then they said, we're not going to try something new on how to fix this until after the next DLC, which is like a year away. So they're going to talk to the community about that in the future, but they're taking their time to think it through. And Destiny has made a lot of mistakes. There's been times in Destiny where it just wasn't that great. Like the first Destiny 1's DLC the year after launch was not great. Destiny 2's DLC the year after launch wasn't great. But they always have come back the next year with a lot of improvements and big things. And the following year, the DLC has always made a huge improvement. So I think you kind of hit it on the head. Also, video game making is like, it's magic, right? Like it's a bunch of stuff that gets spun up in a bowl by thousands of people. And it's kind of amazing that anything ever works. And Bungie basically invented this genre, this mashing up of first person shooters with RPG, with MMO. They made this work in a way that almost nobody else has. I forgot when I was listing off failures earlier that we have the most recent one, Avengers. Avengers was the biggest IP you could probably get for a video game, and it did a lot right, but it didn't do enough to keep people playing the game. And we're still waiting to see if they turn this one around or if it becomes the next Anthem a year and a half from now. So, well, let's move on. We've already gone pretty long on this show. Number five, Watch Dogs Legion is getting their multiplayer finally, and it's actually coming a week from now. So it's coming on March 9th. It's going to be separate from single player. This actually surprised me. So if you played multiplayer in Watch Dogs 1 or 2, it was competitive multiplayer where you were trying to like hack other people. This is going a GTA online route where you spawn into a different online world populated with other players. And it's separate from single player, meaning you don't bring in any of your stats or your characters. And you build up an NPC army of playable NPCs, just like you do in single player, but it's completely separate. And then you can do co-op missions, you can do single player missions, and then they have something that's like a raid. It's a four-player activity. I forget what it's called, tactical something. But it seems like they're going a whole different direction with multiplayer for Legion. I like that they took their time to work on this after launch and they didn't try and shove it in at launch. I think that was smart. And I like that they've made it kind of a low-key thing to get into where it's completely separate from single player. So you actually don't even have to play the single player game. You can just jump straight into it, and it's cooperative instead of competitive. So there's really an incentive to just play with people, use matchmaking or do whatever. I don't know. So that's coming March 9th. I know neither of you guys have this game. I got it. I haven't even started it yet. I have no idea when I'm going to get to it. So.
Yeah, that was my one question I was going to ask. I know you got it for Christmas, but I didn't think you'd even touched it yet.
No, and I told you, I think I said this 2 weeks ago on the show. I refuse to start it when I have so many games that I'm in the middle of. So I'm trying to finish a few. And the ones that I'm trying to hone in on are Control, because I only have one half of one DLC left. And then Assassin's Creed Odyssey. I'd really like to knock those two off my plate. But I'm not really committing enough time to them right now. Like I'm jumping around between a lot of things. And then, you know, Outriders came out with the demo. So I'm going to be playing that probably for the next week or so pretty heavily until I feel like I've played all the characters or at least gotten my fill of like, this is what the game is. You know, I forgot to mention the Outriders thing at the top. After you play the first character class, when you make a second class, it lets you skip the whole like first thing before you jump forward 31 years. I thought that was really cool. Moving on, I got two more stories in the main segment that are the news, and then we'll get to some quick hit announcements. Number six, Forza Horizon 4 Hot Wheels car pack was announced. It's $10, $9.99. It's six cars that are modeled after Hot Wheels cars. I think this one is newsworthy just because it is ridiculous that this is getting paid car packs this far after launch. And it also is a little irritating when they put out car packs that are not part of the car pass that you pay like $40 for or whatever. So like I have the Ultimate Edition of Forza Horizon 4 and this car pack is not included, which is a little bothersome. But then again, I don't really care about Lego cars or not Lego, Hot Wheel cars to begin with. Spencer, any thoughts?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It's crazy that this isn't included in the $100 gold edition of this game that I bought. $10 for six cars is seems kind of steep. And do we have a release date on it? Because I'm looking at the...
It's out now, I think.
Oh, is it? Oh, yeah, you're probably right. Yeah. It says buy now. Good point. Go ahead.
Oh, well, I mean, they do add also free like games to the car. Like they added the Corvette, you know, that we all got a couple years ago. So they do add new cars for free.
And they added a game mode recently where you can make your own tracks, right? Like a crafting mode. I don't know what it's called, but I'm pretty sure they added that fairly recently.
Well, I think it's been in the... No, it's not recent. That's been in the game last, for a while. Like, they may have upgraded it.
It's been within the last 6 months. A lot longer. I don't know.
Maybe there's a new mode that I'm not aware of.
Well... It's funny, though, that we have this story the same week as our next story. You had a perfect little teaser you could have done.
I know.
Tim. You messed up.
Well, hang on. Before I nail that, you're right. I remember now what you're talking about. So they had the make your own track thing has been in there for like a year. But you're right. There's a new game mode where you can play other people's tracks and earn rewards. I forget what it's called. But you're right. That did come out like a month or 2 months ago.
Hey, I will say... these screenshots are super nice. Like these cars, these models look really good.
Oh, are you talking about for the Forza Horizon 4 Hot Wheels Legends car pack? Yeah, two of the cars look really cool. There's one that looks like a classic, like Gen 1 or Gen 2 Corvette with like a double dice, big engine sticking out of the hood.
Yeah, like the headers.
And then there's another one that looks like a, I don't know, some sort of like little futuristic car. But I mean, they're modeled after Hot Wheels. There's two people that will want this car pack: people that are obsessed with Forza that buy everything they put out, and people that are obsessed with Hot Wheels. And honestly, I would have bought this if the game were, you know, 6 months ago. But I have so many cars now in the game. There's no way I would ever need any more. I mean, you and I each have like 500 or 600 cars, and I just, you know, you can only race one at a time. So, but I do love that there's still supporting the game, and I really hope that there is a Forza Horizon 5. I feel like this was their like cherry on the top, like put everything into the game, and I don't know if we're going to ever see another Forza Horizon. It does seem like it's a cash cow, but I don't know. It's just with them moving on to Fable, and how many people do they have to keep making games? Can they do two franchises, all that kind of stuff? So the segue that I missed here is that the same week we got this car pack, they also, well, not they, but Hot Wheels Unleashed was announced. And this is a new game coming that is basically the Hot Wheels DLC from Forza Horizon 3 made into its own game. So you are racing Hot Wheels cars on Hot Wheels orange track, just like when you were a kid in your room, except for it's an entire game. And to be honest, this game looks pretty good. It's being made by Milestone, who is the developer of a lot of racing games, including MotoGP and Monster Energy Supercross, among others. And if you go look at their Wikipedia page, they have made a lot of racing games. So they're making Hot Wheels Unleashed. The weirdest part about this to me is the release date. They're putting it right in the middle of fall when it's competing against all the big guns, September 30th. Thoughts?
These are the kind of sleeper games that, like you said, it's like they look kind of sick because it's like, not, it's like playing into nostalgia a little bit, but I mean, like a next gen game, like looking really good. And imagine like the background isn't even like, it's like the, it's like a child's room and you're on the track and it's like, basically you're inside, you're like on, like in the kid's room and you're going like on loops and stuff. I feel like that'd be a super cool background to have, while you were playing, like almost like Toy Story reminiscent type thing. So, I mean, if this is coming to Game Pass, then I'm definitely going to play it for sure.
Well, it isn't yet, although it does seem like it's a game that would be ripe for it.
Exactly.
But so this game's going to live or die on two things. One, so like it already looks great, right? The graphics and the everything about it looks great, but how it feels and plays will be the one thing that decides whether this is going to live or die. And two, it's going to be a price point. So like if it comes to Game Pass where it's only a $20 game, man, I'll jump in. It's worth that investment. But if this is a $70 game or a $60 game competing against, you know, full-fledged racing games, middle-tier racing games usually don't do very well. Now, maybe they're making this on a budget where they don't need to sell 10 million copies. They only need to sell, you know, 1 million or 500,000. But I'm interested to follow this one. This is like the Lego games. This could be a sleeper. It could be a big win, especially with families and kids and stuff. And I mean, I'm 35 and I will play this if they nail it. So I'm rooting for them on this one.
So my only comment is I was trying to remember. I thought I played a game like Gus was talking about where it's like Hot Wheels tracks in a kid's room, but I can't remember what that was if I played it. But I definitely was Googling it around and I totally forgot that there's a game called Hot Wheels Turbo Racing, came out in like 1999, that I played constantly on PlayStation 1 and PS2 probably, but it was a PS1 game for sure. Constantly played that game. Like when I was, that was like the first video game that I like was obsessed with. And there's actually quite a, you know, Hot Wheels kind of had a solid video game history up until the mid to late 2000s. Like there hasn't really been a Hot Wheels game in probably 15 years of note. So there's a little bit of old history there of decent Hot Wheels racing games. But yeah, Hot Wheels Turbo Racing, man, I was obsessed with that game 20 years ago.
I think the fade out of Hot Wheels games lined up with the kind of the death of the middle tier of game development that you died kind of in the late 2000s, as well as licensed games became fewer and farther in between. Now we're seeing a resurgence of that with like THQ Nordic buying up everyone and investing, and then things like Codemasters getting acquired by EA. Like we're just seeing a reinvestment in the AA space as well as licensed games, but
the
we'll see.
Quick Hot Wheels Turbo Racing story. The I don't know if it was the menu music or like when you booted the game up, but Fuel by Metallica was like the theme song of that game. And so like 6-7 year old Spencer this was the first time he'd ever heard Metallica. And man, there's a reason why Fuel is one of my favorite
life
songs. Exactly. Oh man, I'm after we're done here, I'm gonna look up Hot Wheels Turbo Racing gameplay on YouTube just to get a little injection of nostalgia.
Yeah, after this, let's look up how much it goes for on eBay, because I do have a PS2 that has no reason to exist.
Oh, I still have it. It's at my parents' house. I have it in my I have like a sleeve with all my PS1 and PS2 games because I don't have any of the cases anymore. And it should be in there.
Well,
so
I'm going to your parents' house literally tomorrow morning. So why don't you tell me where that is and I'll go pick it up and I'll live stream it.
All right. Sounds good.
Okay. With that, we move on to the quick hits. And remember, I'm doing these a new way. I'm just going to run through them really quick because these are like the kind of the notes of the week. And then at the end, we'll kind of just talk about our general highlights of the notes. I like all this stuff is noteworthy, but there's not as much to say as far as like discussion. So number one, the Halo TV series is moving to Paramount Plus from Showtime. And you might think, oh, that's not a good sign. They're dropping it. It's actually not a big deal. It's just the Paramount Plus and Showtime are owned by the same company. And they're launching Paramount Plus, and they need content to make that streaming service a successful competitor to HBO Max and Disney Plus and all the other ones that are out. So it makes sense from a standpoint. And honestly, I'd rather pay for Paramount Plus than Showtime. So from my perspective, no big deal. Number two, Cyberpunk patch 1.2 that was supposed to come out in February has been delayed, and it will now come out in the second half of March. And this is due to two things, the coronavirus as well as the large hack that we talked about a few shows ago. And basically, the rumor on the street, and I didn't get a clear source on this, is that they basically were locked out of their computers for 2 weeks. So this was a ransomware hack where they had to restore everything from backups, and they weren't completely back up and running for 2 weeks. So they said in a Twitter three post thread, "Our goal for patch 1.2 goes beyond any of our previous updates. We've been working on numerous overall quality improvements and fixes." So it does seem like this will be the biggest patch so far, but we're going to have to wait another month for this to come out. Number three, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 Plus 2 is getting a Series X and S version. March 26th, Series X 120 frames per second at 1080p or 60 FPS at 4K. Series S will do a 1440p upscaled to 4K. They're also doing sharper dynamic shadows, reflections, and lens flare, plus enhanced skater textures and more. It's $50 to buy it if you don't own Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, and that's a cross-gen bundle, or $10 to upgrade if you own the game on Series X or S, or I'm sorry, Xbox One. Or it's free if you own the Deluxe Edition. I'm not sure if I own the Deluxe Edition or if I own the regular edition and then I bought some skins, but so I'm not sure if I will get this or have to pay $10. It is interesting that they're not doing the Xbox cross-generation for free deal. Like, they're making people pay $10 basically. So that is interesting. Number four, EA has canceled Gaia, the game that was in development at EA Motive. We saw a couple seconds of this in a developer montage at E3 a couple years ago. Supposedly it's been in development for 6 years. Bloomberg broke this story, and apparently it's also been rebooted multiple times. So this was supposed to be the big third person action game from EA. It seems like at the same time they canceled Anthem after internal review of ongoing projects, this one was also given the guillotine. It seems like they're cutting ties with long in development stuff that isn't working out.
Yeah. I think,
and finally,
I was going to say quick on Gaia. I think it was their hope to have an Assassin's Creed or a Far Cry answer, something to compete with those, but clearly didn't work out.
Yeah. And finally, Game Pass and Games with Gold for March. So Game Pass, we haven't officially gotten an announcements for the first half of March. That'll probably come between the show you're listening to right now and next week's show. But we did get a couple that are kind of their own deal. So EA Access, or I guess it's EA Play now, has announced that Madden 21 is coming on March 2nd. And they announced that Star Wars Squadrons is coming in the month of March. So that's two big titles that are coming to EA Play. And because they're coming to EA Play, they're also coming to Xbox Game Pass. The other one is a side scroller called Narita Boy. And this was announced on Twitter. And their release date is March 30th, so the end of the month. But in the tweet announcing it, Major Nelson said it was coming to Game Pass. So that's another just like low-key one that was kind of slid in there. Next week, I expect we'll have the full breakdown of the first 2 weeks of March, what's coming to Game Pass. So we'll talk about that next week. And Games with Gold, Warface Breakout and Metal Slug 3 are available now. They went live already. And then in the back half of the month, you'll get Port Royal 3 and Vicious Attack Llama Apocalypse. And I would just like to point out, this is another month where these are four games that are like, okay, Warface Breakout is a multiplayer shooter, double A. Metal Slug 3 is a good game, but old. And Port Royal, okay, fine. None of these are blowing your socks off. And PS4 is giving you four games, and one of them is Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Yeah.
So, like, this, it's not that Games with Gold is total crap. It's just, it looks like crap compared to the competition that literally invented giving away free games as part of their subscription. And they're over there nailing it the last 3 months. And Xbox has only had one good month out of the last, I don't know, 6, 10, 12.
It's crazy that it's crazy that they can give away Final Fantasy VII Remake this quickly. Because that's barely, it's not even a year old. I thought it came out last spring, didn't it?
I don't know when it came out. Spring of 20? But
I don't know. I mean, either
I think
way.
It's coming up on a year because I think a lot of people were expecting it to have a 1 year exclusivity right. and then come to Xbox, but they didn't announce that.
That was the other thing I was going to say. I thought too was there was the rumor that it was going to come to Xbox soon anyway, but maybe they decided to do this instead. I mean, I'd like to play it. I don't know. I tried Final Fantasy 15 and it didn't work for me, but I think I could maybe do Final Fantasy 7 just from the gameplay that I watched last year when it was new. But
yeah,
I don't know.
Well, I have good news for me on that front. I was finally able to get a PS5 this week. Me and my wife saw a drop at Best Buy and we were both in different rooms clicking refresh. And she finally got through and got me a PS5 that will be here Thursday. So I'll have it just in time to get Final Fantasy 7. It's the PS4 version, so I guess I could have played it anyway. But yeah. At least now I can upgrade it and get the PS5 version. They aren't giving away the PS5 version for free with PS Plus, by the way. You have to pay to upgrade it, but that's neither here nor there. I am excited to at least see what the PS5 is offering. I've heard not great things from the interface perspective and the controller. So we'll see. We'll see what I think next week, I guess. I'll share some thoughts. So the new thing I'm going to do right now is trivia, and that is we're going to play Guess the Game Pass game with Spencer and Gus. Now, Spencer has a clear advantage as a more deeper historian of the gaming culture. So, Spencer, give Gus a little bit of a leg up before you answer. Give him a little help. If you guys can't get this, I will give you a hint. Now,
you know, quite frankly, the one you gave last week was pretty easy, so...
Yeah. I'm still keeping it pretty easy. We're not going to Deep Rock Galactic yet, so I'm not going indie. It'll be a AAA title.
All right.
And it won't be Xbox 360. It'll be Xbox One. Now, I'm going to remove any references to locations or the game's name so that it doesn't give you, like, a hand-me-down. But otherwise, I'm going to say it exactly as the description is written in the Xbox store on their website. So here it is. Blank is an epic story-driven first-person shooter from insert developer name here that blends deadly combat and stealth with exploration and survival horror in one of the most immersive game worlds ever created. I'm going to pause. Anybody got any hints yet?
I don't know why. The first thing that came to mind was Crysis, but I know that's not it.
Explore. That's a good guess, though. It's not enough horror, though. Yeah. Explore the wilderness across vast non-linear levels and follow a thrilling storyline that spans an entire year through spring, summer, autumn to the depths of winter. Inspired by the novel Blank continues the story in the greatest adventure yet. Embark on an incredible journey. By the way, there are so many words I'm having to remove here. Board the Blank, a heavily modified steam locomotive, and join a handful of survivors as they search for new life.
I know what
in
it is
east.
Now.
Yeah, I know. You'd get it by the end.
Now I'm thinking like Snowpiercer, but I know that's still not it.
You're really close. Yeah. You're really
I know
close.
Exactly
Experience
what it is.
Sandbox survival, a gripping story links together classic gameplay with a new huge non-linear
Do I guess
levels.
Now?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
It's Metro Exodus.
Yes, it is.
Metro. Yeah, see, well, I don't understand. Like,
Well, as soon as the word Metro train, was in here like eight times.
Spencer's also played
Metro.
This game, so I...
Well, as soon as you said locomotive, I was like, okay, yeah, it's Metro.
Yeah, I don't know anything about
you
the
You should
Metro
play
games.
That game, Go Gus. You'd probably like it.
I know. You keep saying that I should.
Yeah, I don't know if you'd love it or hate it, because it does have some really slow moments that can like be a little, little boring if you're adrenaline. Like, let's face it, Gus, you like adrenaline. You're an adrenaline junkie for gamer.
I mean, I don't know about that.
I would say, having played the first two, it wasn't as steep of a learning curve, but definitely playing the first two games the first time was quite a bit of a learning curve compared to most first-person shooters, at least. But I don't know.
It's actually turning out to be harder than I thought it would be to pick one of these, because like as I'm searching through the catalog, it's just constantly like games I know neither of you has heard of, or games that are on EA Play, which I'm trying to avoid in the short term because we're just kind of easing into my little game here.
One of these days I'll get it. If you had said locations, I probably would have gotten it. Like if you had said Russia, then I probably would have been like, oh, it's probably Metro.
Yeah, I did take the word Russia out twice because I thought that was too much of a giveaway. Because how many games in Game Pass involve Russia? There's probably literally just Metro.
How many like first-person shooters involve Russia, for that matter? That it like aren't Call like Duty, a multi-location.
Stalker.
Yeah.
Well, that's Ukraine.
Yeah, it's the not. Ukraine. Which is part by the of way. Russia.
What happened to Stalker 2? It just fell off. Like, they were talking about it all the time close to the Series X launch, and now I can't remember the last time we got an update.
We talked about it a couple, like a month ago.
Yeah, I guess that's true, but that's a month ago. What have you done for me lately, Spencer?
Well, it's not, we don't need to know anything. What do we need to know about it?
I guess I want a release date is what I want, because it's coming to Game Pass, and I expect it this year, but. Okay, this has been a long one, so we'll end it there. I'm Tim Shelton. You can follow me on Twitter at Tim Shelton, or you can follow me on Twitch. I like to stream very occasionally lately, but I will get back to it. Twitch.tv/TimJ22.
I'm Spencer Rain. You can follow me on Twitter at Makes It Rain and Rain101 on Xbox Live.
And then I am simply Gus Harden.
I'm Gus and I exist.
Yes.
Thanks for listening. See you next week.
New episodes post every Monday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. You can contact us on Twitter at MultiformPod or by email at questions@multiformpodcast.com. If you enjoyed our show and you're feeling extra generous, please share it with your friends or on social media. You can subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or anywhere you listen.